Has the Apple TV Plus series Ted Lasso dipped in quality this season? That, and just how bad is Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania? We'll get into those things this week on Taking It Down.
An Alabama Tape Projection.
Hey, it's Taking It Down, where we prompt conversations for thoughtful, busy TV devotees from these irreverent outsiders. Welcome to this week's show. We're the TV podcast produced by the Alabama Take website. I'm Blaine Duncan, editor-in-chief of the site. I just can't help dissecting why I like what I like and why I dislike what I dislike when it comes to TV and movies and more. With an English degree and a side hustle as an English teacher, I'll try my best to offer insight that you can use for conversation with others or even with us. Luckily, my ideas aren't the only set of viewpoints on the podcast each week, as with me are these hosts. Adam Morrow is an erudite traveling and studio musician with a penchant for fine literature. Donovan Reinwald, a media specialist with encyclopedic knowledge on film and more. And Natalie Morrow, the first person to ask about fantasy, sci-fi, comics, trashy reality TV, and Beyoncé's music. From us, you'll get the obvious and the obscure. We are here for the TV and streaming obsessed who are just too busy for anything more than the show or movie itself. We'll give the outside of Hollywood analysis, and like a lot of the Alabama Tape productions, it comes with zero Southern stereotype. Let's get into the show. We're here to talk about Ted Lasso to begin. Here's the thing. Adam's back stateside. Our co-host Adam. He's back stateside. Our traveling erudite studio musician. He's back. But the thing is, he's having some technical difficulties today. He's around. He's not with us. But he sends us a message. He sends Donovan and I a message. I hope he doesn't mind me telling tales out of school here. And he says, "Guys, does Ted Lasso suck? ? And that's where we are today. That's how we're beginning. I don't know. I watched it last night, the most recent episode, and I'm trying to debate it myself. What I was doing was looking at it through the lens of Natalie and Adam, especially, and thinking, they think it kind of sucks. What is it that's changed or shifted or not up to par?
Everything. It's all terrible. Everything has changed.
It still has the same vibe and everything, right?
Ted Lasso works when the rest of the cast and the rest of the script and the rest of the story works around him. This is dumb. This is stupid. This is silly. This is not clever.
Okay. Oh, that, there's something we can attach to. It's not as clever as it was. I think I see that. Is it not working for you because it's not as centered on Ted Lasso anymore? Because last night's episode, this week's episode, I watched it last night, had almost no Ted Lasso. He was at the beginning and then he was at the end. And there's been a couple episodes like that.
I think it's just, overall, it's just not well written. It's not well edited. Mm-hmm. It is entirely too predictable. I think I said, two weeks ago or sometime on the podcast, I said, yeah, Roy and Keeley are going to end up back together because that's how this season is going. A good season would not have done that, at least not this quickly.
Yeah, I think there are three episodes left, two now. Three episodes left and they got back together. The predictability is high, but I'm trying to think that wasn't that all kind of signaled in a way that we figured that this is, even in season two, we were like, we think probably Nate's going to come back around and be an okay person. We think, I mean, Roy and Keeley broke up this season, but we kind of thought that anyway. It's telling a predictable story, right? I mean,
it is, but it's doing it in such a heavy-handed way. That it's like, give us a job to do as the audience. Like, let us figure it out and get there. Don't just, like, throw it all out at us.
I like that. Give us a job to do as an audience. That's what I appreciate in good art. And you're saying it's not. I'm questioning it because I still enjoy it and I still think it's pretty good. But I think you and maybe even Adam, too, if we can speak for him, I hope he doesn't mind. No, you guys don't even think it's that good anymore. Whereas I think it's okay. It's still fine.
I think if this season were how the other seasons were, it would be fine. Like, I wouldn't be upset about it. Like, this is just a show to watch. But the other two seasons were just so good, especially season one. That's like, to see how far it's fallen is really disappointing.
Yeah, there was a definite dip in quality in two. I'd still like two, but I think I not having seen three, I think I agree with what you said, Natalie, that it's that it comes down to it can't just all be Ted. The writing of everyone around him has to be sharp. And it just wasn't quite as sharp in to, you know, one to two and apparently now three.
God, three is a shit show.
Natalie mentioned last time we talked Ted Lasso, it is a deliberate, she can deliberately, she can blatantly point to the lack of Bill Lawrence.
For sure.
That can happen. You take away a big showrunner, one of the main writers, and you can pinpoint exactly when a show does this or that or veers in one direction. And I think I can see it sometimes. Boy, I wish you guys could have seen me last night watching this show. I was, you know, I had my hands on my chin and I was like, okay, where is it faltering? Where is it dropping the ball? I thought that one thing that sort of felt like a dropping of the ball was the handling of Danny being suddenly cruel mm-hmm. for the Mexican game, Mexican-Canada game. That felt like something maybe Bill Lawrence wouldn't have done. Do you want to comment on that at all, or is that a plot line you just didn't care about?
I don't think that's the most like offensive thing they've done this season. Okay. Like to me, a couple of episodes ago, when they had all their penises tied on a rope, that's I looked right. at Adam and I said, "They've jumped the shark. This is it. The show is over. The show is dead."
Huh. Penises tied together. Yeah.
Donovan, you've not seen this.
I'm missing a lot.
They were clothed, by the way. It was under the shorts.
But still, like that was a really long bit that we were supposed to find funny. It's like, you got the wrong. This is, what's his name? Who's Ted? Jason Sudeikis? This is Jason. SNL comedy when we had Bill Lawrence comedy. Like when we had something way better.
That is one of the reasons I never really liked Jason Sudeikis until Ted Lasso, because that's always his style of comedy.
Yeah.
And it's fine. Like, it's just fine.
Right. It's fine. But they set the bar really high.
Yeah.
And they have missed it.
I feel one of the things the show's doing, maybe too early to say, but there are only two episodes. One of the things the show's done this season for me is that it's laid out some plot threads, but it hasn't decided to pick them up and tie them together or at least hint at where they're going to intersect. Do you think that's true too?
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't know that. I think they think that they're doing it because it's all mm-hmm. it all feels very shallow. Like they're like, oh, we'll just mention this in passing and now it's covered. We don't have to worry about it.
I think all writers rooms think that, where they think, oh, we've done this. That's I think the worst case scenario in a writer's room is probably they look around and go, this is pretty good. This will work, you know, and it's just not happening. Maybe with Ted Lasso, I'm still thinking it's okay. I don't think I'm as detrimental on the season. I'm not a fan of the Barbara character. Every time she's on screen, I think to myself, I don't want to hear what she has to say. I get that she's a foil for Keeley. You're putting Keeley in a new office with brand new people. You need somebody for her to play off of. I just do not give a shit for this Barbara character. She's very one-dimensional just to be there as a foil. And I get you need foils. You need somebody to display the characteristics of the other person. But that's one gripe I definitely have with this season.
I don't have a problem with Barbara because everybody this season is one-dimensional. If you just came into season three without any knowledge of season one and two, you would mm-hmm. think all of these characters are one-dimensional.
I like how Roy's being done, though. I think that this was coming for him. He's a little softer. He's a little gentler. He's getting older. I think that his character's been played and written well.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's gotten the best treatment, but I mm-hmm. think that's because of who Brett Goldstein is. You know,
that might be.
He's a much better writer than Jason Sudeikis.
I don't disagree with that. Brett Goldstein has really shined this season. I think he's carried this season.
Except for when he had everybody tie their penises together. And then he just giggled the whole time. That was horrible. It was the worst moment in television this year. Saying that in May.
I do love how he doesn't use a whistle and he just yells whistle.
Yeah, that's funny.
That's pretty good. One of my favorite bits, I'd be interested to know who wrote it, was Will acting like Coach Beard for just a couple scenes.
That was pretty good, too.
That actually made me laugh. So
yeah.
kudos there. Right now, we've got everything starting to come in for its landing. Keely and Roy are back together. Rebecca, the owner, Rebecca, she's refused Rupert's advances as well as the Super League, which is a wise choice, and did so with a rousing speech. Just what are they going to do with Ted? He's been pushed to the side. A lot of speculation online that he's going to return to the States and be a father there in person, and that Nate is going to take over Richmond. Is that?
I think Roy takes over Richmond. Okay. Nate gets another coaching job. Ted goes and coaches whatever Kansas City's MLS team is.
Sporting KC.
That's the one. That's I knew right. It had a dumb name.
Yeah, I can't stand that name. Worst name in sports, if you ask me.
No, I think the worst name in sports is Real Salt Lake, because it makes absolutely no sense.
Say it again. It's what?
Real Salt Lake. Like Royal Salt Lake.
Oh, okay.
Is that really what it's supposed to be?
Because it's like Real Madrid is Royal Madrid.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Real Salt Lake. No, okay. No sense.
I'd never heard of them, so maybe. Horrible. Maybe I agree. Ted Lasso kind of sucks for Natalie and Adam, and for me, I think it's okay. Some of this I'm going to have to wait to see how it plays out. I will make my opinion after episode 12.
I will be validated in my opinion after episode 12.
I mean, maybe so, especially with, you know, we laid out some possible predictions and speculations. If that's what happens on the, you know, to the T, you're right, it is predictable.
They haven't done another solo Coach Beard episode, have they? Because that one was just filler for me last season.
No, they haven't.
But do you remember what I said about it? That I was behind about 3 episodes, so mm-hmm. I watched like 3 about 3 nights in a row, and it didn't feel as much like filler if you kind of are sort of binging it.
Okay.
It kind of felt okay. No, they haven't done that, but they have left Ted off to the side. And to me, Ted's the... I'm interested in Ted, Roy, and Rebecca the most.
Were you going to say Ted's the main character in a show called Ted Lasso?
No, I was just trying to figure out who am I the most interested in. It's Ted, Roy, and Rebecca, no doubt. Jamie Tart to a degree. Those are our thoughts, brief thoughts on some Ted Lasso stuff. We'll probably have to come back around to it, because I think we want to see how it ends completely. And if this seems like it is the end. We'll say hello to our host. We say hello a little later in the show. Here they are, though. We've got with us, as always, this guy just bought a goddamn house. It's Donovan Reinwald, homeowner.
Terrifying to be here, Blaine.
Terrifying to own a house. And also with us, you've heard a lot from her. She hates everything about this podcast.
Today I do.
It's Miss Natalie Morrow.
What's up?
We are going to take a quick little break and come back and talk some Ant-Man and the Wasps, Quantumania. Of course, taking on sports, the Alabama Takes Premier Sports podcast has a heavy Alabama lean. That's what you want. But there's some serious objectivity, too. Join hosts TD and Greg every other Monday as they recap and break down the biggest news in college sports and beyond. Find it by searching Taking On Sports, minus the G, or head directly to the Alabama Take to stream it every other Monday. We're back into it. It's Ant-Man and the Wasp, directed by Peyton Reed, one of the MCU's most recent entries. Just landed on streaming. We've sort of transitioned this podcast into TV and streaming only, so that's why we're covering Ant-Man and the Wasp today. I have a lot to say about this movie. None of it's good. None of what I'm going to say. Where should we start? Just kind of in chronological order of the movie?
Let's start with the name of the movie.
Okay, go ahead.
It's horrible.
I didn't like it.
I've been calling this movie The Quantum Menace for years, and I can't stop. Because that would be a better name than Quantumania.
It is pretty dumb. Quantumania. Like, a lot of quantum.
Right at the beginning, it sounds like it's promising something it can in no way deliver on, and no way has any desire to deliver on.
Donovan, you haven't seen it, and you're going to love this.
Haven't seen it, just seen trailers.
You're gonna love it.
You're definitely gonna want to see it after we talk about it.
Natalie sends me a text around Wednesday or Thursday and says, "Yeah, it's as bad as they say." Boy, oh boy! The first thing I noticed was there were some poor directing choices via edits in those first 10 minutes when they're trying to establish like Ant-Man's back in San Francisco and things are kind of back to normal. The cuts were entirely too fast. It's almost as if they filmed it for a reaction shot from one of the actors and then you didn't even get it. It's like it's cut, like they're about to do a face and then boom, you're done. It felt cheap, like a rookie director or something.
That didn't bother me as much, but what immediately took me out, I mean, just complete disbelief, is that Cassie would call them grandma and grandpa. She does not know them that well. That was weird.
Cassie's just going to call them grandma and grandpa. Totally unrelated to these people.
Just hasn't known them long enough.
I haven't seen a movie in the last 10 or 15 years that looked as bad as this one did, other than maybe like a DC movie that I've been lucky enough to forget. It's really easy and obvious for me to compare this movie to any of the recent Star Wars entries. And I think that in so doing, anyone can tell or conclude that whoever works on Star Wars stuff has more time and more sense in developing what aliens should look like and is more adept at doing that than what's here.
I mean, to me, it looked like this. They just got the same people that were doing like all the background design for the Star Wars shows, or just maybe it's all Disney now, so maybe they just stole some backgrounds and threw it into this movie and maybe just changed the color palette. I mean, they were essentially stormtroopers just with different helmets on.
Yeah. Yes, the blue helmeted guys were definitely in the same vein. Just those quantum people, aliens slash people who were like a tribe of people, they were just members of them that were just blobs. It's like they just gave up.
Yeah.
Just a blob. Just be a blob. Just put us a blob in the CGI. In its theatrical run, all critics made sure to mention that Janet should have or would have told her family about Kang or some of the specifics of the world. But boy, this movie insists upon making that point for us. Like, I counted at least 3, if not 4, times where she says, "Oh, I just didn't have time to tell you," or "I just didn't want to tell you this." It's almost like they knew they had to patch that up.
Yeah, I mean, there were so many. They expect us to believe. Okay, going back to the Cassie calling them grandma, grandpa thing. If we are expected to believe that they have a relationship, there are no connections being made between these people other than it's grandma, grandpa. Half of them know that she's really smart. The other half have no idea what's going on in their basement. Like, are they not talking to one another? They just went through a massive world, half the world is dead situation, and they're not talking?
It didn't make sense in huge swaths of the movie.
Can I also have one more random beef? I'm sorry. I have so many beefs with this movie. Yeah,
this is all about just laying it out.
I obviously watched this movie by myself. Wasn't going to subject Adam to it because I knew going in it wasn't going to be good. So I'm sitting on the couch watching this movie, and within 2 seconds of them going into the quantum realm, they've already talked about, oh, this is a way into the quantum realm or to communicate with the quantum realm. They fall into it. They hit the ground. First thing Cassie says is, "Where are we?" And I said, "You dumb bitch, you're in the quantum realm."
Shout out Johnny Bananas there. This movie, this was the dumbest point of the movie. And I'm a fan of this kind of thing when it's done well, but this movie really wanted to equate homeless people to the quantum beings tribe. You know, the whole look out for the little guy. And then you even, and I swear to you, Donovan, this is true, Michael Douglas even mentions socialism at one point.
Is his character just doing, like, just sleeping with ants? Is he just having sex with ants? I mean... How many times did he say, "I just like ants. Where are the ants? Yeah. I need some more ants. Are there ants here?"
This is getting to like great Gonzo levels of like,
It's not even so bad that it's funny. It's just bad.
No, it's bad.
Honestly, I talk about that whole trying to equate homeless people with the quantum people and saving them or not overlooking the little guy. That's just they're trying to stitch that together. It's bad. But the worst thing I've ever seen in a Marvel movie. Oh, God. It really tried to do MODOK.
Oh, my gosh. It was so bad.
Huh.
I felt so sorry for so many actors in this movie, Bill Murray in particular, but maybe none more than Corey Stoll, who's a pretty good actor. He's not a bad actor. But I thought for the longest, when this movie was in its theatrical run, that when pictures of Corey Stoll as MODOK, I always thought it was a Photoshop joke.
I did too.
I thought, that's a joke. They're just saying this movie's bad, and they're just using that as a joke.
Yeah, I thought the same thing.
Donovan, his character as MODOK mm-hmm. says, it's never too late to stop being a dick, as he kind of sort of saves the day at the end.
Hmm.
And he says, stop, I'm going to stop being a dick. He says that twice.
Doesn't MODOK stand for a machine organism designed only to kill? That seems like it's out of
canon. Oh, and that's a point of reference. That's a point of reference in the movie. They milk the MODOK character for everything they can. And let me tell you something. There's not a lot in that udder to begin with. Oh, if he would have been visible once, quick little joke, gotten rid of, maybe it could have worked. But
they should have never lifted the helmet.
Never. Mm-mm.
Why did they do that?
Bad is the only word. There's got to be a better word than bad. It was hilariously stupid.
It's embarrassing.
Would you even call it inept? Like it just never, like everyone worked.
Yeah, it was totally inept.
They had no clue.
It just all felt rushed. It all felt rushed and like, we got to do this. We got to film this. I couldn't care less about the tribal lady quantum leader. She was in The Mandalorian. She's the lady who's kind of doing the torturing. She's still kind of involved with the Empire. Remember her?
Short-haired girl?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's barely even a device, much less a character in this movie.
Can we talk about how terrible this is? We're talking about a movie that stars Paul Rudd, the most charismatic person, actor, whatever. And yet somehow he and Evangeline Lilly, that's her name, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have zero chemistry. How do you not have chemistry with Paul Rudd?
Yeah, I never believed they love each other.
No.
They didn't have a lot of chemistry in their previous movies either.
It's worse now.
Yeah, it is worse. And I'll say, speaking of acting, either the actors weren't giving a good performance, and we can speculate on why that could be directing there, or Jonathan Majors is just that much better of an actor. I know he's got his controversy, I get that, but I'm just talking about what's on the screen. Once he was on the screen, I was just instantly more engaged. The movie almost has something. When Kang first meets Janet in a flashback, and when Kang threatens Lang when he's got both him and Cassie jailed, it's almost got something there.
I wonder if that's like a generational thing of younger actors, or at least newer actors, are coming on just by the nature of the industry with more green screen experience, whereas older actors don't have it and are struggling in those kinds of worlds. And this movie is 100% green screen.
Yeah.
That is a very interesting thing to think about. That's a good, that's an interesting observation.
His performance, especially early in the movie when he first appears as Kang, is so good. I don't know that I've seen a comic book movie performance as interesting as what he's doing. And at times subtle, at times not that subtle, but also not overdone. It's not overcooked. It's good. The premise, though, that Kang can do, I guess, seemingly anything, but really all he wants is for Ant-Man to retrieve his own little mother box. You know, I don't know if that premise holds water. It's too dangerous for him to go down there and get it. I don't know.
I don't think he would have a way to... He could probably go down there, but he wouldn't have a way to get it back to the size that it needed to be or whatever. He needed their PIM particle technology.
Okay. The one part that could have worked, and I thought the movie was going to do this with the trailers, was Scott wanting to ensure his daughter is safe. And again, that's Majors who's selling that, because he's really the dangerous mm-hmm. person here. But they just kind of drop that too, don't they?
Oh, they dropped everything. Nothing is consistent in this movie.
By the way, Donovan, Kang can be defeated because the ants lived 1,000 years in a day.
What?
That's what happened. Yeah, exactly. That was my reaction too.
What?
The ants got sucked down into the quantum level, and for them, one day is 1,000 years, so they're really smart now, and they can attack Kang.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Gonna have to pray over that one. That sounds really stupid.
Donovan, you probably can comment on this as well as Natalie and I. Marvel's strengths are becoming its detriment. They can create as much as they want because of money, but mm-hmm. that's saturated and dulled the interest. They can do multiverse stories, but this movie is not just confusing, but also inane. Like, this is a variant of Kang and not the same Kang that the Loki person, which was horribly explained. They can bring back characters. Here's my favorite. They can bring back characters because they can afford the actors again, but yet they do so with Darren becoming MODOK. Darren from the original Ant-Man. And they keep calling him Darren, too, by the way. They keep saying, Darren, it's really you. Compare this one to that second Ant-Man. That second Ant-Man's kind of breezy and funny and fun and, I don't know, light. And this is just a sad turn for this particular Ant-Man franchise.
What are they going to do with this multiverse story? I don't understand... What I feel like we've had three movies now that have dealt with the multiverse, and all three of them have had different explanations about what's happening to the multiverse, and nothing's connected, and I don't know why they're doing this.
I don't think they know.
No.
They need the Russo brothers back.
When they said that they were doing a lot of multiverse stuff, I just thought that is too confusing to be engaging. It requires too much explanation. It requires too much exposition to get away with that kind of... It's just hard to do. You know, everything, everywhere, all at once, managed to do it. It's rare to get it done well.
I think that drawing from the comic side of thing, and I haven't read every comic everywhere, but the multiverse thing seems to mainly be... Like, the attraction of it is that they can do one of those what-if stories, right? Like they used to do in the mm-hmm. comics. Thing about those mm-hmm. what if stories is they were usually one issue.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't take down both Marvel and DC have done multiverse stuff, but I think like what Marvel's trying to do is like it's fun, but it's one issue. It doesn't take over the whole series.
Yeah, I think they wanted to do it in Marvel Cinematic Universe to do the things like they did with Spider-Man, with having Andrew Garfield and
mm-hmm.
Tobey Maguire. And it worked there, kind of. But it worked as far as getting those three characters on screen and having some fun and, you know, smiling about those three guys getting to play off each other as Spider-Men. It's not working as a storyline, though. It's just, it would take a certain kind of writing that's not happening.
Yeah, it's bad.
I mean, you do get that kind of writing. Where it's like, you know, I do think that one of the strengths... All the Marvel movies is that they're pretty like consistent and that you know pretty much what you're gonna get when you sit down and watch one, but also they fall prey to this sort of bland uniformity where it seems like everything is done by a formula and it's like we have a joke here because we have to have a joke here. We always have a joke here.
That was 100% Quantumania. They did nothing to step away from the formula
mm-hmm.
at all, and it was very predictable as well. We talked about Ted Lasso being predictable this season. This movie was... You could have given me the first 20 minutes and I could have told you everything that could happen.
Could you have predicted the ants?
You didn't predict the ants.
To a degree, I think. They've got to come into play somehow.
I mean, that's true. I'm just not sure I could have predicted that reason.
Yeah.
I kind of miss in movies where... there used to be like a bit of a preamble before the action started where you kind of, you know, dive into the lives of your characters, see what's going on. Not mm-hmm. 2.5 minutes of, hey, guess what? Cassie's a genius. And now we're mm-hmm. in the multiverse, like, or in the quantum realm, wherever we are. Give me something to invest in
mm-hmm.
before we just jump into this ridiculous action.
It was so rushed and poorly edited in those first 15 minutes. So badly edited because they were trying to rush it. I would like to see what some of those scenes ended up being on the cutting room floor, because there's at least a few of the actors' reaction shots. Anyway, we had, I don't know why we do this to ourselves, but there you go. It was on streaming. We picked it up. Speaking of streaming, I think the next thing we're covering is HBO Max, Bama Rush.
Oh, man, yeah. I can't wait.
I can't wait. We're going to try our best to squeeze that one in before some of us take vacation. That's the end of our episode this week. So if you are not a subscriber, follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast. And what we'll do is we'll talk to you next Tuesday. See everyone later.